everyone. Welcome back to the podcast. Hopefully I don't sound creepy, but I'm trying to talk quietly because both my kids are sleeping. Evie just turned 3 months old yesterday. So Evie is my daughter. If you're new here, I gave birth 3 months ago. she is my second. I also have a toddler who is almost four. I keep saying 3.5, but he's only 3 months out from being four, which is crazy. I don't know how this happened. I don't know how I went from like being a club rat and doing keg stands in my 20s to now like throwing out food that has red dye 40 and not using dryer sheets because they're toxic or whatever, endocrine disruptors. Anyway, I don't know how I got here, but here I am. In my glory of 35. But I wanted to talk to you today about, I've been fascinated by the topic of trad wives. So I actually have Catherine on my podcast this week. She is a trad wife, not trad wife, trad wife. Society would call her a trad wife. I have her on. I wanted to kick off this little series talking about trad wives. There's going to be a part one and part two. So part one is talking with societally deemed trad wife, Catherine. This episode was so interesting to record. I loved having her on. I love just in general hearing people's perspectives on things, even if I don't agree with them. And especially, honestly, like especially if I don't agree with someone and if someone has like wildly different views than I do, I love hearing from them because I just find it really fascinating how we are all so different. I mean, you'll hear in the episode, there are a lot of things that Catherine says that I actually do agree with, and I absolutely see her point and her worldview. So that was interesting. I hope you guys enjoy next week. So this is part one. Next week, I have Jo Piazza coming on the podcast. She has been doing a series on trad wives on her podcast, Under the Influence. So I hope you really enjoy this part one and part two series. All right, let's get back to the episode. Well, I guess not back to the episode because we never left. So let's actually start the episode. All right, guys. Love you, love you. Hello, everyone. Okay, we're going to be talking about a hot, spicy topic today. And I have a trad wife slash not trad wife slash society would deem her a trad wife on the podcast, Catherine. Let's talk about you.
Okay, so my name is Katie DeGrow, and I live with my family outside of St. Paul, Minnesota. And we have four children, a 5-year-old, three-year-old, a 2-year-old, and a 7-month-old. I'm a former photographer turned stay-at-home mom. Yeah, I'm in my 30s. What more do you want to know?
Well, we had something in common. You're also biracial.
Yes. So I have my father's African-American. My mom is white. My husband's white. And my kids are white presenting.
Yeah. And like, I think that matters in this conversation because
it does,
at least
very much so.
Right. Because what I see on social media, literally when I type in trad wife, I just see a lot of like white women and they're all blonde. Like, I feel like,
yeah,
it's, which I think is really funny. And I feel like that's what people have an image in their head. But like, even the concept of like traditional wifehood is this is not a new concept. So why is it blowing up? Right. And okay, so in your message, you wrote, you don't consider yourself a trad wife, but society would consider you a trad wife. Do you want to talk a little bit about that?
Yeah. So I'm not sure what the definition is aside from what the words, you know, trad wife is short for traditional wife. Okay. So does that mean someone who is, you know, American? Does it, you know, can you be a trad wife in a different country? I don't know. The definition isn't super clear. I think where it's murky is it seems like it could be someone who's religious. It could be someone who is a stay-at-home parent. And while I don't love a lot of labels personally, I'm just not comfortable with a ton of labels. I am comfortable with the label Catholic because that's my faith background. But aside from that, I don't really love a lot of labels because I think what's tricky about right now is that definitions are changing. And so I wouldn't prescribe that entitled to myself personally, but I think others might simply by the default that I am a stay-at-home mother, so my husband earns the income. I don't. I earn a tiny bit of income here and there, but it's not enough to sustain me. It wouldn't be enough to support our family, right? I am religious. I love being home with my children. I love being a mom. I love being a wife. I love being a homemaker. And so it's confusing because some of the pieces, there's a lot of think pieces that I read, and so many of them are, it seems as if traditional wife or trad wife is being conflated with staying home with your children. But I think people are careful to not use stay-at-home mother, because I think that could insult a lot of people. And so it's easier to use the term trad wife, because someone could say, well, I'm secular, or I'm very progressive, and I'm a stay-at-home mother. But, you know, that would offend somebody. It's a slur.
Yes. So I agree with you. I think this, it's such a tricky topic. And like my postpartum doula and I have been talking about it all the time. Oh my God, hold on.
Oh, I love that. Guys, That's great. I love postpartum doulas.
Guys, if I'm like weird today, it's because I have a baby and I'm like breastfeeding /
normalize it
and like,
yes, she's, you're like, amazing.
She's doing the thing where she like pops on and off the boob, you know.
Yeah, anyway, normal.
So okay, you bring up a great point. What's the difference between a trad wife and a stay-at-home mom? And what I've seen in my like field research, I'm calling it, and like watching a ton of TikTok videos, watching people reacting to it, is it seems like the trad wife movement on social media has been depicting like a submissiveness, like it's like verbiage, like I submit to my husband and my husband proudly owns me, or giving up my, like letting my husband make all the decisions and it feels good because I don't have to like think about it. And I think that's kind of what the difference is between trad wife and stay-at-home mom. But then it's also murky, because there's also verbiage around like serving your husband and servitude. And I have a tricky relationship with that, because I think I wrote in my message to you, like, I am a career woman. I always have been, always wanted to be. But I also find so much joy in serving others, specifically my husband. I love making him feel good and seen and loved. I love, and I love doing the home stuff, I love doing the home stuff. Like, I do love making a good meal, and I do love to look nice for him. So it seems like that's like a little bit demonized on social media.
Yeah, that's actually normal. So I think the lack of clarity is actually very illuminating, and I think it's done on purpose, because in my experience, I think deep down that most radical leftist feminists don't respect stay-at-home mothers. And you can usually decipher this by how they posture towards domestic labor. So domestic labor is work. We all know it is. And I think it's really challenging if you've been raised to believe that only people who are below you, which in our country, in the United States, that's Black and brown women, do the domestic labor, right? So I think if you're, and this is my own context, right? And I just want to preface, these are my opinions and this is my lived experience. I've always lived in very progressive places. I was born right outside of Minneapolis, lived there until I was 14, moved to Portland, Oregon, another very progressive place, and then moved to New York for a year for my first year of college, and then came back to Minneapolis and have lived outside of St. Paul now, back in Minnesota for, you know, over 15 years now. So I think that informs my story and my opinion. I think, you know, you can talk to people who have escaped, you know, fundamentalist Christianity, and they're going to have a totally different story and a different perspective. That's not how I was raised. I was raised in pretty lefty, progressive spaces where homemaking was really a dirty word, and it was not something that you should aspire to. And I really think there is a link between who does domestic labor in our country and where this attitude towards domestic labor comes from. And so I think that that lack of definition by feminist journalists and podcasters, who I think are journalists too, is intentional. Because when you're raised to believe that, you know, no, don't babysit, do the unpaid internship. No, don't be a nanny, go work for pennies at this newspaper. You're really taught and trained up from a young age that changing diapers and sweeping floors, oh, you're too good for that. You shouldn't have to do that. So I think part of the real disorienting response towards, you know, women who might identify as more traditional like myself, or people who do actually identify as trad wives, is because there is such a deep disrespect for domestic labor.
Wow. I just want to like sit on that for a second, like a deep disrespect for domestic labor. I mean, that's true. I at least in so similar to you, I was brought up in pretty progressive cities. I was in a Boston area. I was outside Albany, New York. Like,
yeah,
I was raised to feel like college was my only option. And
yeah,
that's fine.
Exactly.
Like for me, that worked because that's what I always aspired. Like I wanted to be a lawyer since I was like, I'm not a lawyer, but I wanted to be a lawyer when I was like 13. And that works for me. But I find that it is really disrespectful, like to that, because also my parents immigrated to this country and they started off their careers in this country as house cleaners. And I remember like they schlepped me along to the houses they cleaned. And what they taught me is that no work, like work is work is work. There's no work that's like, you're not too good for.
Right.
Does that make sense? Like,
absolutely.
And I've like met people in my lives and in my life, and even like in my own family, that have felt too good to do like service jobs, for example. And I always recount that like one of my most like favorite jobs ever, and this includes my corporate career, is when I was a barista at Starbucks. Like I absolutely loved sweeping the floor, like cleaning the bathroom. Like it was all about, and obviously making beautiful lattes and making people happy, having a chat with them, making them feel good. Like, I don't know. I never felt too good for any of that labor. So that's why I find like the discourse around trad wives to be so fascinating, because I'm like, wait, what's wrong with like actually like loving to like bake bread and make your children's childhood special and memorable, and like you're a team with your partner too. Like if your husband provides in a financial sense, you are providing still. He is nothing. Maybe this is like, hold on one sec. Sorry, baby.
She's so cute. Precious.
Switching arms. I don't want to say like he's nothing without you, but like I know my husband would
My husband says, he's like, our lives would totally fall apart if you weren't here.
My husband is, I love him. We're a team. Yeah. However, like I run this ship. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
And the thing that the dialogue I've seen that might be controversial, but I'm just going to say it, is like a lot of young women are taught that, you know, career is their only option, but then they end up very stressed out because they end up with careers. I'm a great example. I have a corporate career. I have a important job, but I also still do all the household stuff. I still carry the mental load of motherhood, and I am so stressed and on antidepressants and, you know, and it's like, and what I've seen is like, well, what if we only had to focus on one thing? Like, what if I only had, not only, I don't like to use that word, but what if I focused on homemaking as my full-time job? Would I be less stressed? And I feel like in a way, yes. But then adding another complicated layer onto it is that it's also really hard to survive these days on a single income. That's like the other caveat, is like, we spent like $400 at Costco the other day. Like, how do people do it? So I don't know. What do you think? I just feel like I just like word vomited a lot of things.
Yeah, I'm going to try to respond to everything. This is such a okay. fun conversation. Okay, so the discourse around it is dysfunctional. I think kind of to go back to, I think part of what happens too with people who are very career focused is that they don't learn some of the homemaking skills when they're young, right? Like I was talking earlier about the people who take the unpaid internships versus nannying. Well, I can tell you the job that best prepared me for motherhood was nannying. And then I also worked at a daycare. And so we have created a culture of really helpless women who might be very successful in their careers. And that's great. There's nothing wrong with that. But they are completely illiterate when it comes to homemaking. There was a woman at my old gym. She had her first baby and she shared that she had never changed a diaper, but she had a law degree. And I thought to myself, how can you get to 30 some years old and have never changed a diaper? And I can't imagine how horrifying that would be then to be given a baby at a, you know, you have your baby at the hospital and they say, here's your baby, go home. If you have never had any sort of experience with, whether it be being a camp counselor or being a babysitter. And I think that's the real danger of demonizing domestic labor in teaching that it's, you know, because when we teach women that it's below them, we're really falling into racist tropes. And a lot of feminism is rooted in racism and people should go read about that. There's a couple of really good books at the end, maybe I'll recommend, but it's really critical to understand the racist roots of feminism, especially in this country. And I can't speak to other countries and other areas because I'm only dialed into what's going on here. But that really sets up people for, like you said, stress and chaos. And statistically, you know, that demographic of people are most likely to be on antidepressant and anti-anxiety meds. And I just want to say that medication can save lives. So this is not a conversation where we're shaming or demonizing anybody. But I think it's just data, right? Like, it's just important to look around and gather information and just think about, well, what is this information telling me? And I think everything kind of started to blow up around the pandemic because you had people who were, traditional career women, and they then were required to work from home. And there was a lot of frustration around childcare and child labor because that entire domestic support staff of babysitters and house cleaners went away. And I just want to say that the people that were sent home to work are still in the educated class, right? Like, if you were working at Burger King, you still had to go to work. So I think there has to be a conversation too around economic issues and who was able to do that. But I think it's so interesting. I remember reading these think pieces on the New York Times and stuff, and I'm like, the people that are complaining the loudest have the most support. They have the higher degrees from very prestigious universities. They have the successful careers. They have a husband, right? Like, let's not even talk about a partner without talking about, do you even have a husband who's there for you? They're not frontline workers. They're people who are able to take their work home. And it was wild to me to read these articles that were just really, I think, about the tension that people feel between, their time and their family and their work and all of it blowing up. But then to also speak to economic, and I think that's a really important piece in all of this is like, who can afford to stay home with their children? It's a privilege, absolutely. If you can survive off of one income, it's a privilege. But I have to say, and I'm in the Midwest, right? When I hear people talking about this, I often hear like they're people who are in expensive places, right? Like New York City. If you're living in one of the most expensive cities in the country, it's not going to be easy to live off of one income, but you can do it in different parts of the country. And it may require a certain level of sacrifice. I know families where, you know, maybe the husband's in ministry and the mom is working from home to earn some extra income and to make ends meet. I know people who have one car. I know people who choose to live in an area that they maybe would not choose to, whatever. I think ultimately what you prioritize and what's really important to you, those become your values. And so if you really want to stay home with your children, I mean, yes, some people truly cannot, and that is a reality. But I think it's more accessible than people like to make it seem, because I don't think people are really willing to sacrifice a lot of times.
Talk to me about the racist undertones of, was it feminism that you mentioned?
Yeah. Or
I am curious about that.
Okay, so there's a really good book called End of Woman by Carrie Grass. I actually want to plug two of her books. The Anti-Mary Exposed, and that's from a Catholic perspective. So people may not want to read that because there's some religion involved in it. But The End of Woman, I actually just got a portion downloaded to my Kindle. I don't have all of it, but I started reading it, and she goes into a lot of history. So some of the early suffragettes in the United States really did not want Black people to have the right to vote. And I think that it's really difficult to suss out those values. People like Margaret Sanger, the founder of Planned Parenthood, had very problematic, to use the term from today, beliefs around race. And this is all information that I think people don't really like to discuss, because the ideas behind the modern feminist movement, the third wave feminist movement, is intersectionality. But it's really not intersectional. This is my opinion. It's a worldview that seeks to amplify a certain kind of woman, and it demonizes anyone else. And I think this is why the conversation too feels really flattening, because it's like, unless you fit into a certain box, you're quote unquote harmful. And I know this is something that we've been doing in our culture for a few years now, but I think it's actually really dangerous to do that, because are there people who identify as tradwives who are racist? Absolutely. Are there people who identify as tradwife who are bad people? I'm sure there are, because there's bad people everywhere, and there's corners of the internet that are terrible. We all know this. But when everything is harmful, then nothing is. And then I think it makes it difficult to actually suss out real harm. Like, in my opinion, someone like Ballerina Farm is not harmful. And trying to make her into someone who is harmful because you're feeling insecure, or her story makes you feel a certain way, that's wrong. Because there's nothing that she's ever shared, in my opinion, that is, blatantly sexist or blatantly racist, or she's never issued any threats. You know what I mean? So that's a problem that I have, because I think it's easy to just say, hey, I don't like somebody, and that's fine. We all can like what we like and dislike what we dislike. But it's really interesting to me that there's this focus on more traditional leaning women and a desire to call them out as, like this super dangerous, out here trying to take over politically. I mean, it's wild, some of the stuff I've read. Like, these women are so busy in their homes, and maybe some of them are involved in politics, I don't know. But this fear, this huge fear, is really fascinating to me.
I agree. I think I have so many thoughts. So I went down like the rabbit hole of like Ballerina Farm. There's like When the Milkmaid. There's Lexa, Lexilla something. Her account's actually really funny because she does a lot of satire. I'll have to send it to you.
Yeah, I think I've seen it.
And then like Estee something. She's like the big one. She's 25. She doesn't have kids, so I'd love to see like what her perspective, how things change when she has kids. But I think where it's getting harmful is where there's really, when there's accounts that are really, really extreme. And I think it's that extreme evangelicalism where, like, women, it's the posts like proudly owned by my husband, because I don't.
Yeah, that's abusive. I mean, that's not right. That's not healthy at all. And I don't know if they're necessarily even evangelical. They might be fundamentalist.
Right. Have you been listening to Joe Piazza's series on
Tradwives? I think Joe probably can't stand me, because sometimes I comment on her stuff and give her a hard time. But I think some of what Joe does is she doesn't give people a fair shake. And I understand. I think one thing I've noticed with her writing and podcasting is that she seems to kind of vacillate between being upset by this type of content, but then being drawn in and attracted to it. I think that she was a trad wife for Halloween, and she wrote a post once about how she wanted a wife, and it's just like wanted someone to do all of that for her. I'm not exactly getting that wrong. But that kind of stuff, I think, is actually problematic, in my opinion, is some of that content.
Well, it's judgment just in another way. Like,
it absolutely is judgmental. And that's where that lack of clarity, because I have said before, I'm like, so, and then a lot of times the response is, I've also read things kind of in that similar vein by other feminist writers. You know, this almost sort of Schadenfreude around wanting, you know, these women who are more traditional to befall some sort of tragedy. So often you'll hear things like, oh, well, that's not going to work for you if your husband dies or you get divorced.
Or he cheats on you. Right. I see that, like, a lot too.
Can we step back? Like, why are we wishing harm on another person? Like, I really want to ask these feminists that question. Why are you hoping harm on this woman and her family or her children? Like, God forbid anybody dies, right? And some divorces are amicable and some aren't. And I think, thank God that we have divorce in our country so that people can escape abusive marriages. Do I think that it's overused and overprescribed? Absolutely. And I can say that as a child of divorce myself, but I think this desiring for women to be punished is really strange, especially when it comes from feminists. And I don't think everybody is doing this. I think Tia Lovings, who escaped fundamentalist Christianity, she writes critically about trad wives, but she's also very charitable. I've not seen that same posture from people like Joe Piazza or Sarah Peterson or Jess Gross, although I don't think Jess Gross writes a ton about trad wives anymore. But I think wishing pain on someone is very strange to me. And I think there's, you know, I think women do need to be wise, right? Like, I think you do need to go into your life and making decisions with wisdom and ultimately, and this is another thing that I think is particularly challenging for millennials. There's a real fear around making decisions that are big decisions. And I think it's because we've all seen, you know, things happen. We've all seen marriages fall apart or people's careers go up in smoke. I mean, we're not baby boomers. We've seen a lot go down. And I think there's a real fear around making the wrong decision. And I think sometimes when people are struggling with the decision that they've made, it can be easy to criticize other people for making a different decision. I think that's at the heart of it. But also there's just risk in the gift of life. Like, when you make a choice, whether it's to be a, you know, go to college or to get married or to have kids, you're taking a risk. You're taking a leap of faith. And I would just hope that for everyone that we would be at peace with the risks that we're taking. And I think if you want to stay home with your kids and you feel at peace about that, that's great. And that's at risk. And with it, there's lots of things that can happen. Same for choosing to work exclusively outside the home.
I think you put it very delicately. Like, there is a risk in every choice you make. I think the word there is choice. It seems like, I don't want to say the radical left, because I don't want to sound like I'm getting into politics, but I feel like really extreme feminists, it seems like they look at the trad wife movement as women not having the choice to enter into that. And, like, I think the honest, not everyone wants to go to college. Like, not everyone wants to go to university. Like, the amount is debt. Like, I had $95,000 in debt.
Yep. Paying off my loans. I'm still paying them off. Yep.
Yeah.
Yep.
That for a, I don't need my degree for what I do today. Right. Like, I'm in marketing. I do social media marketing for a tech company. I do not use a single thing that was taught to me in those 4 years. And yet I had so much student debt. It's just, and I don't think I'm alone in that. I think a lot of people go to college, my husband included, and get out and do something different or don't use it at all. And why can't that be homemaking? I think that's the part that I'm confused about. But I think it's that so much of what you mentioned. I have so, guys, sorry, this, my train of thought's going to be very like ADD, because then I also want to bring out that I have seen a movement, myself included, of women, families wanting, desiring land, desiring going back to basics. Like, and of course, the pandemic kind of spurred a lot of that. But like so many people from New York City, because I live in New Jersey, so many people from New York City moved out to my area where I am out in the country and have bought land and have animals and are finding this call back to where we came from, where we are more in tune with nature and the land. And I wonder, I don't know, part of me is like, is the Tradwife movement just sort of bringing to light what's actually kind of already happening, is people being called back to their roots? Because like life is insane, and exactly, like medication is not, we're not demonizing it or anything, but like I think that the stress, the everyday stresses of life, does contribute to a lot of the anxiety, stress and anxiety that we feel. One point is also that the workforce is not built to support families. Your child gets out of school at 3 o'clock. If I work until 5, who's going to pick my kid up? Like, what the heck? Like, so women are told to work, but then get in trouble for picking up their kids and being there for their kids. But if they're at home supporting their families, and then they're demonized for that. It's like, again, I feel like we just can't win. Like, that's what I think makes me annoyed about like the Tradwife stuff, and I find it fascinating, is that it's just another example of like people being upset about something that like women are doing. Like, again, like where are the trad where's the discussion around trad husbands? That's what I want to know.
They love it. My husband was like, "Can I come on the podcast?" I was like, "No."
But yeah, I mean, actually would love to hear a man's perspective. So like think about it.
He's up in his office. He might come down and he might say something. He is very straight to the point. I don't know if your listeners would.
Yeah. Listen, this is an exploration.
The podcast lady said she wanted to ask you a quick question. He says he has to get on a call. But I will say, when we went on our first date, so my husband and I met when we were later. We were a little bit older, I should say. I was, on our first date, was I 30 and he was 32. So like I had lived a whole life. Like I had lived the city career, yeah, girl life. Dating. So when sometimes people will come to me and be like, "Oh," I'm like, "I didn't get married when I was 19. Like I have lived that life.
And which is the misconception.
It was not fulfilling. Spoiler, yeah. Like it didn't work. And it maybe works some people, and that's fine. Personally, that was not my experience, but I always knew I wanted to stay home with my kids, and I always had hoped to have kind of a bigger family, and that was so countercultural to the culture that I was raised in, like we discussed. And I remember on my first date with my husband, I was just kind of in a place where I was just really straightforward at that time, because I was, you know, I was 30, and it was like, why beat around the bush? And I remember telling him, he was like, "Oh, I really like you." And I was like, "You're not going to like me when I tell you how many kids I want to have." And he's like, "How many kids do you want to have?" And I'm like, "Oh, 4 or 5. And he's like, "Oh, I want more than that. That's great." And I remember thinking, okay, this is very different, you know, because so many people that I met are like, "Oh, you know," like, and then when it came to staying home, I remember we discussed that really early, and he was great. He was like, "I support you in whatever you want to do." And I said, "Well, do you have a preference?" And he's like, "You know, honestly, I would love it if my wife was open to staying at home, because my mother-in-law, she worked for a while and then she was able to leave her job and stay home with my husband and brother-in-law, and he found a lot of value in that." And so I think we're in a fortunate situation where we can make it happen, but we both value it. But I wanted to go back to something that you said earlier. I think some of the Tradwife content, I'm not on TikTok, so I don't know anything about that, but on Instagram, I think some of it can be mean-spirited. And I do want to speak to that, because some of it can be unkind and mean-spirited and uncharitable. And I don't like that. I don't think it's okay to be like that, no matter what viewpoint you hold. I think being mean, being unkind, it's not acceptable, and it doesn't reflect positively. But I also think that it's a reaction to people writing the kind of pieces that they're writing, and they're being published in things like the New York Times, or, you know, they're on very popular Substacks. People feel defensive about their way of life and what things that bring them joy. And I guess it's my opinion, I would hold the really unkind words that feminists say about these sort of women as kind of the cause of that. And people can be mean, like I said, no matter what their viewpoints are. But generally speaking, in our society, domestic labor, homemaking, it's so disrespected. And, you know, the first question we ask them when we meet them is, what do you do? And people will, you know, say what they do. And they'll say, I'm just a mom. So while I can sympathize with, you know, feminists feeling a certain way towards, you know, tradwife content, I also would challenge them to look at how society at large views those who do stay home with their children.
Hold on. I had like 20 different thoughts that floated through my mind. Okay. I think it was back to, oh, okay, here we go. I found my train of thought. Do you have daughters?
I do. I have 2 daughters and 2 sons.
Oh, fun.
Yeah, it's great.
Now, having had your lived experience, how will you raise your daughters?
Oh, yeah, this is a great question. So my kids are pretty little, like we've discussed. And so I mean, a big part of this is our view as a Catholic family. So I talk to my daughter all the time about vocation. My oldest, she's 5. And I'll say, you know, you could work if you want to when you get, you know, older, or if you'd like, you could be a sister, you know, you could go into a convent and be a nun, or you could choose the vocation of motherhood like mommy does, you know. So I present options to her. I don't put any sort of, I don't elevate one vocation above any other.
I find that awesome and fascinating. And I wonder if our generation is going to lean towards that, because, like, I know my husband and I talk about it all the time. Like, we have a problem with higher education. My husband's a PhD. I have a bachelor's. Like, we're, quotation marks, highly educated people. And we don't believe that our kids need to go to college. Like, if Archie or Evie decide that they don't want to go to college, we do not. There's no, like, shame in that. Versus how I grew up, it was like, go to college or die. Like, it felt like
exactly.
immigrant family. Like, they were like,
yeah.
When I said I didn't want to go to law, I was like pre-law and I took the PL set. And when I said I didn't want to be a lawyer anymore, oh, I thought my family was going to disown me. So,
I feel the same way. My husband has a MBA and I have a bachelor's degree. And I mean, if I would have told my high school teachers that I wanted to be a homemaker, they would have looked at me with, you know, they would have been so disappointed, and they probably are, but I'm loving my life, so it doesn't matter. I think that kind of thinking really traps people, and I understand where it comes from.
Yeah, totally.
Because in many respects, higher ed does open doors. However, we're seeing a lot of shifts with that, and I'm the same. You know, for us, college is not the end all be all, and I would be very upfront with my children about any sort of educational path they're taking, and really thinking long and hard about the investment and if it's worth it. Because I think many of us, you know, millennials are still looking at this debt and wondering what life, you know, I just think for me, because I had a photography business, I would have been able to invest so much more into my photo business had I not been saddled with so much debt. And it's ridiculous.
I think the misconception around trad wives and why people are giving it so much hate is that people are envisioning a woman that doesn't have choice, that isn't giving choice to her daughters or her children. But I think the daughters are a discussion. And like, I think it's harmful too. I think the accounts that do sort of promote a woman losing her agency, I think that is harmful for like an impressionable young teen. Like, mm-hmm. maybe I just feel like there should be choice, and like there should be more of like an equal discussion around homemaking and it being a proud vocation. Now, here's my conspiracy theory with it, is that a lot of these women that also run these accounts that are very extreme, they get more followers and more engagement. Like, I'm a creator. You're a creator, right? Like, your mm-hmm. account looks like it's a creator account. Like, mm-hmm. oh yeah, it is. You have like 13,000 followers. So you're a creator too. You know that if you put a slightly controversial piece of content mm-hmm. out there, that is going to blow up. I have a video that I posted in late November after my daughter's birth. It wasn't even meant to be controversial, but it said like, sending my husband home so I can spend the first night alone with our daughter. And it was, I didn't mean it like that.
Yeah.
But like, yeah. It's still today, this morning, still I get comments and engagement and followers mm-hmm. from it. So what's the motivation? The motivation is actually to kind of keep posting controversial content because Instagram loves it. And then with more followers and more engagement, you get more brand deals, more money. So mm-hmm. maybe the whole trad, the people who are like super extremely trad wife now that are Gen Z are almost playing a character.
Like, that's definitely a possibility. And I do think the algorithm rewards for rage. And I'm interested in having a real conversation. I don't, like I said, I mean, have I shared things that are probably a little sassy here and there? Yes. And I try not to, but we're all human and we're all allowed to have our experiences. And I think there was a period of time a couple of years ago where I was facing a lot of really negative commentary from actually people
really?
In my real life. Yeah. Who?
Ooh, can you talk more about that? Fascinating.
Well, where do I begin? Yeah. Where do I begin?
What do you think was like the most like critical? And then after that, will you also share like what is your dynamic like with your husband?
Yes.
Sorry.
Well, okay. So sorry. What's the first question you want me to answer?
Catherine, I think I'm just so excited to be talking to you that I'm like all over the place. Okay. So let's talk about the criticism that you've received from real people in your life.
Yeah. I mean, so like I said, I live in a pretty progressive area. And generally speaking, I find that the progressive lens towards any sort of tradition is one of skepticism and sort of disdain. And you know, there's like those people that are, it's like an old coworker or someone that you used to go to the gym with. So they're like sort of an acquaintance, but they're not really a friend. You know, I think sometimes people would confuse my content with being prescriptive, and they would maybe feel a certain way about it. Like, oh, you know, I had someone tell me once, this is someone who's very disturbed, but she said that, you know, me talking about, I do this activity with my kids called Morning Basket. It's like a homeschooling thing, that me discussing that was making her feel like a bad mom. And I'm like, no, I'm just sharing a creative project that I'm enjoying with my kids. Like, that's a you problem, not me. But I would also get, you know, I would get things like that sometimes from folks who, and I think a lot of where the passion of this entire topic comes from is that I think people have a lot of wounds around this particular issue because it feeds into, you know, our sexuality, our relationships, motherhood, if we're mothers. And so people get upset if they are maybe feeling not comfortable in themselves.
I think this kind of goes back to what we were talking about earlier about like a lot of the mean comments. Maybe they're kind of deep rooted in this like subconscious jealousy of.
Oh, yeah. I think jealousy is a huge part of it. That's an emotion that every human feels that, right? Like we all feel anger, we all feel sadness, we all feel envy. And, you know, I think what was particularly challenging for my situation, just to get really personal, is I was very single as a photographer nanny. I wasn't making a ton of money, but I was really happy. And I lived in this one bedroom apartment and I made it really cute, but it was a one bedroom apartment. And kind of to go back to what we were talking about at the very beginning too, you know, I'm biracial and Minnesota has a huge wealth disparity. There's really no Black middle class here. And there certainly isn't like a Black upper middle class. There is one, but it's very, very, very small. And so there's a really unhealthy dynamic and relationship between white progressives here and people of color, in my opinion. This is, like I said, my opinion. Not everybody would say that. I think it's dysfunctional. There's a lot of white saviorism. And so for me, I think it was really challenging because I went from, you know, living this sort of quote unquote, like, you know, acceptable life to suddenly I was a stay-at-home mom. Then we got married after we had our first baby. We moved to a house outside of the city. My husband is a partner at a venture capital fund. And I think it was just really disorienting for some folks and upsetting. I will say it wasn't a super graceful transition on my part. I was kind of dealing with my own, you know, it's a big transition to have kids and to get married and buy a home. And then there was a lot of, I think because our life was so kind of public because of, my photography and stuff, it just was challenging. And I think it felt maybe threatening to some people, or maybe envy was part of the story. You know, some people have been open about that with me, some haven't. But yeah, I mean that it's a real thing. And I think if, you know, someone's really great at baking bread or whatever, and you feel a certain way about it, instead of getting upset, maybe ask them for tips. Or go on YouTube and learn how to make bread. I mean, these are problems that can generally be solved.
I think what you mentioned about like the morning homeschool baskets you do with your kids and your friends saying mm-hmm. it makes her feel like a bad mother. I mean, wow, the courage to her to actually like say that openly and not have it come out in some sort of other like weird passive aggressive behavior.
Yeah.
But I think that's like kind of what it comes down to. And I feel like I've even experienced, I mean, jealousy is a human emotion. I've experienced that too. Like when I see moms that are super crafty or their homes look super beautiful, it's like, God, I wish I could do that. Like,
yeah.
Sorry, one second.
No, that's fine.
Do you want to dive into actually, what is your dynamic like with your husband? Because I think that's another thing about like the whole trad wife discussion is like the picture that mm-hmm. is painted versus like reality.
Yes, I'll try to answer this the way that I think you want me. You know, I think I know where you're going with this question, so you can tell me if I'm not. You know, I think both my husband and I, we have the same dreams for our family. We have very similar, you know, we're the same religion. We have, you know, we're similar politically. I'm a little more progressive than he is, but we're pretty similar. We have the same parenting style, so we have a lot in common. And we're different as well because we're two individuals, but we want the same thing for our family. And so we've got a similar vision and we both see each other as, you know, equal partners, but we do come at our marriage from a biblical perspective. And, you know, we believe what the Bible teaches and what the Catholic Church teaches about marriage and family. And that may seem very extreme to some people, but it's what works for us. And I don't feel like I'm less than my husband. I would say I'm like a kind of an old school complementarian. Like, I think we're different and I think we complement each other. I'm not interested in what feminism offers. I really am not. And, you know, people might take issue with that. But that's, that kind of, I mean, it works for us. Our dynamic works for us.
Do you mind just going into a few details of like, what does the Catholic teachings like preach about the role of role of marriage. And then when you say you're not interested in what feminism has to offer, like specifically, what do you mean by that?
Yeah. So marriage within the Catholic faith is, it's a sacrament. And it's, you're fully giving yourself to your spouse. And, you know, that involves teaching around NFP, so natural family planning. You aren't supposed to use contraceptives. That's like a whole, that would be a whole other podcast. but you're not less than your husband. I think there's a lot of fundamentalist Protestantism, like really weird sects that talk about that, but that's not, you know, the dignity of the human person is really central to Catholic theology. And like I said, the focus on vocations. But motherhood is, we're all called in the Catholic Church to motherhood, whether it be physical motherhood, spiritual motherhood. And so motherhood is really respected and I would say celebrated within the Catholic faith. But there isn't any teaching or doctrine that says that you can't work outside the home, or that if you do that, you're a bad woman, or, you know, you're not. It's not a salvation issue.
Yes. And I think that's where like the fundamentalists, like fundamentalism is harmful in every religion. That's my opinion. And like we've seen that in a lot of different religions. Like what was the show? My Unorthodox Life on Netflix.
Yeah, I loved that. That was so great.
I mean, she, right. And she brought to light with what Jewish, like Orthodox fundamentalists, like fundamentalism, how it's harmful towards women. And so that's the other bone I have to pick with the trad wife discourse, is like people keep throwing the terms like, oh yeah, those Christians, man, or the, and I'm like, oh
right,
oh no, guys,
no.
Please no, because like I'm a Christian, I identify as a Christian, and I have a lot of Christian women friends. I'm part of this Bible study where we're all Christian women. We all have businesses. We're all high performers. Some of us earn more than our husbands. And like, that is not like, I don't know. You know, get what I'm saying? Like, don't.
Oh, yeah. The Proverbs 31 woman is a business owner. I mean, anybody who can read a Bible can read that. But fundamentalism is very harmful. And I think that's the problem, is that this fundamental, you know, people experience fundamentalism. People are in fundamentalism and their stories need to be told. But projecting fundamentalism onto all stay-at-home mothers is unfair, and it's wrong, and it's just simply not true. But it depends on what you're doing. I mean, there are people who would look at me and think I was a fundamentalist because, you know, we are open to life, and I, you know, I'm pro-life. So, you know, folks would take issue with that, but I don't personally describe myself as a fundamentalist.
When you say you are not interested in what feminism has to offer, tell me more. I'm fascinated.
I think it's a bill of goods. I think it, you know, I want to be really careful with my words here, because I have friends and family who are very proud feminists, and I love them, and I'm not here to hurt anyone's feelings. Personally, for me, what I have observed, you know, you got to judge stuff by its fruit. And I feel like I was a victim of feminism, and the kind of the chaos of my 20s was a result of, you know, being a young woman with dreams and desires thrown into a society that will eat you alive. And it felt disorienting so much of that time in my life. And I think that that's common among most young adults, is it's a strange and chaotic time. But it seemed like the feminist prescription was, you know, get on the pill, get on some sort of birth control, have as much casual sex. It's totally fine. If you get pregnant, terminate your pregnancy. You know, don't get married until you're at least in your 30s. You know, never give up any earning power, because, you know, if you do, you're going to get abused. And, you know, you have to work full time when you have kids. And if you don't, you know, you're going to be setting yourself, setting yourself back with your career. And it, the fruit of it is very chaotic. That's something I've discerned over the years, is that there's a lot of chaos. and sort of discombobulation that is attached to that lifestyle. And I really run towards peace personally. I do. I don't like any sort of chaos.
Thank you for your refreshing take, and thank you for being brave to talk about it, because yeah. it is hard. It's, you know what? We live in a time where it's hard to take a stance because of cancel culture. And like, when I hear you talk,
it's already canceled. So
you're like, I'm already canceled. So like, whatever I say, I'm good. But like, I think when I hear you speak, and you know, some things I agree with, some things I don't. I just think, why do we all have to think the same thing? Like, why can't we have, like, I think my issue also with some of the trad wife, like, criticism is like, why can't just let these girls be, you know, let them put on their pretty dresses and like,
people can't let them be because I really do think that there are some people who feel really uncomfortable with the choices they've made, and they worry about, maybe I made the wrong choice. Also, it's easier to get angry at. So I want to go back for a second. I don't think we would see this kind of discourse around traditional women if Dobbs hadn't happened. So this is my own theory, and people can take it. Dobbs, if Roe hadn't. Oh, the Dobbs decision, that was the overturning of Roe v. Wade. So that happened in July of 2022. I've been kind of plugged into the pro-life movement for a long time. So I pay attention to the news on that. But that seemed to be a real galvanizing moment for a lot of left-leaning women. And it's interesting to me. I think it's easier to get upset with, you know, a woman baking bread in her kitchen than it is to go and write your congressperson or get a bunch of people registered to vote. If I was a feminist and I was upset about the state of affairs, I would not be over here writing think pieces about Ballerina Farm. I would be getting my butt out and getting people registered to vote. I would be writing my representative. I would be doing that. And it's interesting to me because I think it's easier. And part of what I also think happens within the feminist movement is there's this internalized misogyny, right? Like, I believe sexism is real. I believe you can be sexist. I believe, you know, like, you don't have to be a feminist to believe in sexism. And I think sometimes what happens is, because there's that internalized misogyny, it's like a disordered response. And there's a focus on what these people on Instagram are doing instead of, you know, maybe focusing on, I guess, getting your views heard or getting laws that you cared about passed.
It's just the whole keyboard warrior phenomenon where like my husband and I actually talk about this all the time. We're like people upset with like the president and presidential campaign, but never vote in their local politics or never get involved in their local. They don't even know like what's going on in their own district, but they think that voting for the president is going to change things.
I totally agree with you. I also think feminism is a luxury belief. So luxury beliefs, I believe it's Rob Henderson who coined this term. There are beliefs that signify social status by the upper classes, but they harm lower middle classes. So, you know, you'll hear controversial people like Jordan Peterson talk about it, but it came from a person named somebody else. So that's part of it too. I think, some of the think pieces I read, again, and I like to read people who I disagree with because I read everything, but the kind of complaining, like, I mean, I've heard other Black women say, like, I would love to be home with my kids. Like, I don't know what they're complaining about. And I mean, I read a piece recently where someone was complaining about making a snack for their kids' school. And I'm like, do you know how many women would love to be in the position to, like, that's the biggest problem, like, is that you're mad that you have to make a snack for your kids' school. And listen, there's a place for lament. I think that there is a place for lament, but the cycle of like complaining and complaining, complaining within, you know, feminist circles is just, it's not productive. Like, it's not solutions oriented, right? So I understand you got to complain, but then you also have to pick yourself up and say, okay, what am I going to do next? Like, what am I going to do with this? How can I change this? Instead of just sitting there and complaining. I also think, man, like, I hope I never do anything wrong where my husband feels like he needs to go onto the internet and complain about me and our kids. Like, how hurt would I be? You know, that's the other thing I don't like. Listen.
She said what she said. She said what she said.
I said what I said. My husband has done things that I don't like. I don't agree with him on everything. There are so many people I can go to. I can go to a girlfriend who I trust. I can go to my priest. I can go to a therapist. And I'm not saying it's wrong to discuss real life issues on the internet. I'm not saying that. I just wonder, how would you feel if
disrespected?
It's so disrespectful. Yeah. And it's so strange to me. Like, find someone who can help you. You know, go to a pastor, go to a priest, go to a therapist. It's just hurtful. Imagine if they were saying that about you.
I think, wow. I've actually never had it, like, I never thought about it that way, but like, I don't complain about my husband on the internet. Once in a while, I'll like joke about him on my podcast.
Yeah.
But it's like, it's in a loving way, but like,
in good faith. Yeah.
But I've seen what you're talking about, like that type of content. And I agree. Mm-hmm. I've always kind of felt it's disrespectful. I also feel that way about kids too. Like if you show your kids having a meltdown, like I've never done that. Because like, I just feel like it's disrespectful. Like if I'm having a meltdown, which I do, like I would hate it if someone had a camera in my face and then like posted it on the internet. Oh my, if my husband did, I don't know. You know, so I think you bring up a good point. And I have seen this like trend of motherhood creators that just like, it is, I call it the sad mom creator.
Yes.
Where like every post is like, motherhood is hard.
Mm-hmm. Well, and then
we're
you talk
so
to
sad
women
and we're so
they
hard.
They don't want to have kids. Y'all are.
And again, I'm with you. Cathartic complaining. Like, listen, that's why I started my whole podcast, to talk about the hard stuff. But like, some of it is cathartic. But like you said, like, I don't know. You also at some point got to pick yourself up and say, like, I get to make the snack. I don't have, like, it's not like, oh, I have to make the snack, but I get to make the snack. Like, I am so lucky. And I've found myself, like, I have a 3.5-year-old. And I was texting my mom, like, my mom group, and saying, guys, is it just Archie? Or is, like, 3.5 hard?
No, it's every 3-year-old. It's every 3-year-old.
Holy moly. Okay?
Yeah, they're wild.
But, like, I had a moment where I'm like, you know what? Like, I am so blessed to have my whiny, annoying 3-year-old. Because like, even what's going on in, like, you know, the war in Israel and Palestine, and I mean, it's hard to even talk about it without tearing up. But so many children, so many parents, like, I think it's nice for once in a while just to sit and say, like, okay, is my life perfect? No. But am I so effing lucky? Yes, that I was born on this side of, you know, the planet. It's just I don't know. It's I just got chills thinking about it. But like, yeah, I think. But then also social media, like when the algorithm picks up one sad mom video, you just want to make a whole bunch of sad mom videos. So,
yeah.
Is it really the algorithm that's like the devil in all of this? Like, is that the most harmful?
I don't know.
I know. I'm like going into a black hole.
To go back to what you were saying earlier, I think also it's important to note that, you know, the people that, you know, who are podcasting and writing about this, they belong to an educated middle, upper middle class, right? So if you can afford to write for a living, you are in a certain income, and you might still struggle to, you know, make ends meet with inflation, whatever. But it's really, I think, critical to understand your place in the grand scheme of things. And so, it's people who aren't, they're not really, I would say, super lower income, to my knowledge. I mean, if you're doing art for a living, you're in a certain economic class. But I think the real danger behind some of this culture around disparaging husbands, whatever, is that I think that actually galvanizes the far right. So I always say, I tell my husband, my talent is I can make everything the fault of feminism. And I'm like, yes, we see that. And let me tie it back to, I really think some of that kind of those dark corners, all that icky stuff, I think there's a real link between, you know, this feminist mindset and what it sort of can inspire and create in very unhealthy people.
Well, I guess the image that flashed through my mind when you were talking was like, it just seems like, you know, hate and then hate. Because when I think of far left and I think of far right, all I think of is the word hate. Because there's this like, they just want to be in their echo chambers and they don't want to have healthy discourse like we're having now. And having conversation and being open-minded. And I love that you said that you like reading things that you don't agree with and that challenge you, because I am the same, girlfriend.
Like, I love it.
I freaking love it. I want to hear other people's perspectives because it's so unhealthy to be in the echo chamber. So, okay, I don't want to take a, I could talk to you forever. You always have an open door. Anytime you want to come on and rant about something, please let me know.
You're so kind.
Do you want, with, you know, any, do you have any like final parting words or thoughts?
Let me look at my notes. Well, I just would love for the folks who are out there who are criticizing, you know, more traditional women to be more open-minded to the fact that maybe these people just want a different life and that's okay. And that doesn't make them any less valuable than you, or, any more powerful than you, right? Like, I think that's the other part of it is like, oh, they're so dangerous. It's like, no, they're probably just as influential as you are because they're a normal person like you are. And I just wish people would be more accepting of people who want a different life, right? You know, we spend a lot of time in our culture drilling in, you know, you need to be accepting of this, you need to be accepting of that, and that's fine. And I would just ask that the same courtesy be made towards people who enjoy homemaking.
I think that's like the thesis statement. And I've thought that too. I'm like, we live in such a culture where like we want everyone to be like equality and be accepting. And yet until that person doesn't have the same viewpoint as you, and then it's not okay to be accepting of them. So it's such a weird extremist time that we live in. That's why conversations like this are healthy. Catherine, are you Katie? Have I been calling you Catherine this whole time?
That's okay. No, that's my, I mean, my handle on Instagram is Catherine Louise DeGroat, but my,
Katie. Yep, I have your account pulled up on my desktop here. Yeah, it's Katie. Sorry, Katie. Katie, tell us where everyone can find you.
Yeah, I have a website. I blog a little bit on there. It's just Catherine DeGroat. But you can mostly find me on Instagram, Catherine Louise DeGroat. And then I have a Substack too. But I'm just kind of getting that up off the ground. So yeah, this has been such a fun opportunity. I'm really appreciative.
What is a Substack? Because I've heard Joe talk about it.
Yeah. Yeah. It's just like it's a newsletter. Mm-hmm. It's free. Yep.
That's cool.
Yeah, you should start one. I would love to subscribe.
Well, I'll subscribe to yours first. I need this baby to be like a little older, I think, to have like one more thing.
But
I think
it's precious.
Thank you. Everyone, I will link all of Katie's stuff in the show notes. I hope you enjoyed this discussion, everybody listening. Like, I think it was a little different and I freaking love it. And I could talk to Katie forever. So yeah, everyone, thanks for listening and stay tuned next week for the next episode. Thank you, Katie.
Thanks for joining us this week on the New Mamas Podcast. This podcast was created to help first-time moms everywhere navigate this new stage of life and talk about the honest and the raw moments in motherhood. I'm your host, Lena Forrestal. I'm a working mom by day and a blogger, photographer, and podcaster by mid-afternoon. And as a first-time mom myself, I'm on this journey with you. I hope you enjoyed this episode as much as I did. And if you did, be sure to subscribe and leave a review on your favorite listening platform. You can donate to the show at buymeacoffee.com/newmamaspodcast. Stay in touch by following us on Instagram at New Mamas Podcast and Lena Forrestal. Thanks again, and stay tuned next week for the next episode. Bye!